And I ask New Yorkers to wait to hear our defense before making any judgment.
Good luck with that, Mr. Mayor. I'm sure that New Yorkers will wait.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
That's one reason.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
It is not.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is The Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA, as well as other fine terrestrial affiliates in California, Oregon, Pennsylvania, Hawaii, Ohio, New York, Louisiana, New Mexico, New Hampshire, Arkansas, Washington State, Virginia, West Virginia, Wisconsin, and Minnesota, not to mention a whole bunch of fine streaming outlets blanketing planet Earth. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com with, yes, as you can tell, a lot to get to today, so welcome aboard, buckle up, and thanks for joining us for another thrilling edition of the Bradcast. Hi, yeah, Desi Doyen.
Hi, we got a 10-pound show and a 1-pound bag.
There you go, as usual. We have got also some late-breaking news today on a bit of long-overdue accountability for the persistent right-wing MAGA lies about evidence-free election fraud that they claimed took place back in the 2020 election, but I'm going to hold those two related stories there on that accountability regarding a voting machine company, a right-wing so-called news outlet, and a disgraced former Trump attorney. Going to hold that for our B block today, given some of the other breaking news that we need to get to first. So I do hope you will stick around for that as we start here, of course. As we go to air, parts of Florida are already beginning to flood as a monster-sized climate change-fueled Hurricane Helene approaches. Water was already rising in the streets on Thursday morning of Gulfport and Treasure Island, Florida, as Hurricane Helene was bearing down on the state even before it made landfall, with storm surges predicted to be as much as 20 feet. I should note an unsurvivable 20 feet, as
yes,
the experts are warning. Helene is forecast to grow into one of the largest storms in the Gulf of Mexico in the last century, and that's saying quite a bit, as parts of Florida are still recovering, by the way, from Hurricane Debby just last month. Disturbingly, Helene is currently a dangerous Category 3 as we go to air, and it's forecast as a direct hit, it looks like, on the state's capital of Tallahassee, not far from where Debby made landfall just weeks ago, though potentially in a much more populated area of the state's panhandle this time around with Hurricane Helene, so it could be even more dangerous. But while it's largely too late, I think, to get out of Florida at this point, as I understand it, states beyond Florida in the southeast, where Helene is expected to swamp after Florida, folks there still have time to prepare or to leave, even though, as I understand it, there are already serious concerns about how much water some of those places may be able to withstand from yet another storm, Desi Doyen?
Oh, yes. Now, first of all, you know it's bad for an incoming storm when the Waffle House closes.
Oh,
so right now,
is that
though,
right?
Waffle House has confirmed it has preemptively closed several locations in Florida.
Uh-oh.
They didn't provide specific details or locations, but, you know, they have the reputation of being the gauge of just how
yes,
bad it is. And in the Big Bend region of Florida, the Taylor County Sheriff's Office has sent out a notice asking residents who refused to leave for the mandatory evacuation order, told them to write their name and birthday on their arm or leg in permanent marker so that they can be identified. So, yes, storm surge, dangerous, unsurvivable. But now, of course, as you mentioned, Hurricane Helene has a huge, huge footprint. The tropical storm force winds are extending about 345 miles from the center. Hurricane force winds are reaching 60 miles from the center. So it's affecting a large number of people. But the worst and most concerning impact are the flooding, as you mentioned, in North Carolina, Tennessee, Georgia, South Carolina.
That's after the Florida strike.
That's actually happening right now. Asheville,
really?
North Carolina is already flooding. They already had high water rescues early Thursday morning before Helene has even made landfall.
Is that just
anywhere.
From early storm surge?
No, that's so we're talking about North Carolina. So basically the mountains of North Carolina. And what's happening is that the rain is falling already. It's called a predecessor rain event. That's when moisture surges out ahead of an approaching storm system, and then it interacts with an existing weather front. So they expect total rainfall from the existing storm that has already started happening, then directly from Helene when it finally gets to the Appalachia and those states, to total as much as 18 to 20 inches. So in mountain areas, that is a recipe for killer flash floods.
Wow. Okay. Well, thanks for that great news, Desi Doyen.
Yeah. And, I mean, no matter where you are, you should always, you know, take a moment to think through what you might need in case extreme weather events strike your community, because it will happen.
And it definitely will happen in the Southeast over the next several days. So please stay safe out there. All right. So in other news, let's do a quick review here, shall we? In late September of 2023, Joe Biden's Department of Justice indicted top-ranking Democratic Senator, U.S. Senator Bob Menendez of New Jersey, along with his wife, on 15 criminal counts related to conspiracy, bribery, fraud, and extortion. Just months later, in July of 2024, he was convicted by a New York jury of all charges and subsequently resigned from the U.S. Senate shortly thereafter. In early May of this year, Joe Biden's Department of Justice indicted Democratic Congressman Henry Cuellar of Texas, along with his wife, on also criminal charges related to money laundering, bribery, and conspiracy. The congressman, first elected to the U.S. House 20 years ago, and the most recent Democrat apparently to have held a statewide office in Texas when he served as their Secretary of State, he has pleaded not guilty here, but he has not yet gone to trial. In September of last year, also, a special counsel appointed by Joe Biden's attorney general at Joe Biden's Department of Justice indicted Hunter Biden, the son of Joe Biden, the Democratic president of the United States, on charges related to a firearm that Hunter Biden legally purchased and possessed for 11 days before it was thrown away. Charges that it seems no one has ever been indicted for before in the country without also having been charged with crimes related to the unlawful use of that weapon. And in December of 2023, Hunter Biden was also indicted again by Joe Biden's Department of Justice, by the same Biden attorney general appointed special counsel, a man originally, by the way, appointed by Donald Trump as a U.S. attorney, on 9 tax charges, including 3 felony and 6 misdemeanor offenses. The Democratic president's son was eventually found guilty of 3 felony charges in the gun case, making Hunter Biden the first child of a sitting U.S. president to be convicted in a criminal trial, though his sentencing is still pending. His conviction on felony charges resulted in Hunter Biden losing his license to practice law in Washington, D.C., a license that had previously been suspended pending the results of the trial. Hunter Biden has since changed his plea from not guilty to guilty in the federal tax case, where he is also awaiting sentencing. That's a lot of Democrats charged by Joe Biden's Department of Justice. So if Joe Biden's Department of Justice has been weaponized to go after Donald Trump and Republicans, as Donald Trump and Republicans still pretend, then boy, Joe Biden's Department of Justice must be really, really bad at it. Because their weaponization seems to keep hitting high-profile Democrats instead. On Wednesday night, it was reported that Joe Biden's Department of Justice had indicted the Democratic mayor of New York City, Eric Adams, after a months-long probe that included a whole bunch of his close associates and is said to be continuing today into potential additional criminal charges by the sitting mayor. As Reuters reports this afternoon, U.S. prosecutors on Thursday charged New York City Mayor Eric Adams with accepting illegal campaign contributions and luxury travel from Turkish nationals seeking to influence him, capping an investigation that has sent the largest U.S. city's government into turmoil. Well, I don't know how much turmoil it is. It's New York. It's always kind of turmoil. That's their thing. In any event, in a 57-page indictment unsealed on Thursday morning, prosecutors laid out an alleged scheme stretching back to 2014 that helped to underwrite Adams' 2021 mayoral campaign and showered him with free rooms at opulent hotels and meals at high-end restaurants. In return, according to prosecutors, Adams pressured city officials to, for example, allow the Turkish, the country's new 36-story consulate to open, despite safety concerns. But he pressured the fire chief to open that Turkish consulate anyway. The Democratic mayor now faces five criminal charges and could face decades in prison if found guilty. Speaking to reporters outside Gracie Mansion, the New York City mayoral residence, the 64-year-old Adams denied all wrongdoing, said that he would fight the charges in court, and that he would not step down as mayor of New York City.
This is not surprising to us at all. The actions that have unfolded over the last 10 months, the leaks, the commentary, the demonizing, this did not surprise us that we reached this day. And I ask New Yorkers to wait to hear our defense before making any judgments. From here, my attorneys will take care of the case so I can take care of the city. My day-to-day will not change. I will continue to do the job for 8.3 million New Yorkers that I was elected to do.
Amen.
It's an unfortunate day, and it's a painful day. If it's campaign violations, I know I don't violate the campaign.
That's right.
If it's foreign donors, I know I don't take money from foreign donors. And I verbalize that to the team both in writing and both in communication, and we will continue to do that, and we look forward for the legal team to handle this as I handle the city of New York and continue the success that we've witnessed in the last 2 years and 9 months as the mayor of the city of New York. Thank you very much.
Mayor Eric Adams in New York City on Thursday after the indictment against him was unsealed. Earlier on Thursday, federal agents searched the mayor's Gracie Mansion home on Manhattan's Upper East Side. According to a Reuters witness, around a dozen people in business attire were seen walking on the mansion's grounds with briefcases and duffel bags. Adams, a former police officer who rose to the rank of captain, is the first of the city's 110 mayors to ever be criminally charged, at least while in office. While he has so far refused to calls to resign, he could be removed from office by Democratic New York Governor Kathy Hochul. But according to legal experts, that process is a complicated one, so we will see. New York has been in a state of political upheaval for the past month, reports Reuters. Adams Police Commissioner Edward Caban resigned on September 12, a week after FBI agents seized his phone. Days later, Adams' chief legal advisor resigned. On Wednesday, the city's public schools chief, David Banks, said he would retire at the end of the year after the New York Times reported his phones were seized by federal agents as well. So I suspect there will be much more to come in New York City.
Yeah.
As the prosecutors at Democratic President Joe Biden's Department of Justice continued to enforce the rule of law by rounding up and charging corrupt public officials, whether they be Republican or obviously Democrats, And also, no matter how powerful or high profile they may be, including, yes, the president's own son, who Joe Biden, by the way, could have pardoned, but he didn't. I think Donald Trump would have pardoned his own son if he had been charged with federal crimes.
Well, now you're asking about his sons, but in general, yes, I think he would.
Well, it depends which son, maybe.
Yeah.
Anyway, the Department of Justice is carrying out the rule of law here, no matter who it is, including if it's a former president of the United States who has been charged by federal officials and, by the way, found guilty of 34 criminal counts by New York State already. If they believe, you know, they have the evidence to prove that he committed crimes. That's how it works. That's how it's supposed to work in any event. Now, in yesterday's program, we played a clip from a hearing in the U.S. House, in the Republicans' House Subcommittee on the so-called weaponization of the federal government that was formed. This committee, this special committee, was formed after Donald Trump and the GOP attempted to pretend that Joe Biden had somehow weaponized the Department of Justice to go after Donald Trump and other Republicans. This House subcommittee actually still exists, despite all of those crimes that I listed off for you there, where Joe Biden's Department of Justice nabbed top-ranking Democrats. And it still features, you know, members, this House subcommittee on weaponization, still features Republican members of the U.S. House who are willing to go along with the idea that the DOJ has been weaponized to go after them. And after their cult leader, Donald Trump, who was indicted in two different criminal cases at the federal level and two different criminal cases at the state level since leaving office. After, by the way, already having been found guilty of using his company to defraud banks and being found liable for sexual assault. Lucky for him, however, while serving as president, he was apparently actually able to weaponize the judiciary in a way, from federal judges in Florida to justices on the U.S. Supreme Court to, you know, help them out by making up new laws and interpretations of the Constitution if they have to put both of his federal trials on hold until after the election, if they ever happen at all, given that Trump-appointed U.S. District Judge Eileen Cannon has tried to completely dismiss the case related to Donald Trump's theft of thousands of pages of highly classified documents, and the corrupted right-wing U.S. Supreme Court has gone even further to say that sitting presidents have complete and total immunity from almost any criminal actions that they may carry out while serving as president, and that anything that happened as part of their official acts as president cannot even be examined for use in holding a president to account for crimes that had nothing to do with his job as president. Pretty good deal. And while Joe Biden clearly has not weaponized the Department of Justice to go after Donald Trump or other Republicans, and while Donald Trump did weaponize the federal judiciary to keep himself out of trouble, you know who did weaponize the Department of Justice to go after political enemies while they served as president? Well, that would be, of course, yes, Donald Trump. Even if Republicans in Congress have somehow, I don't understand it, but they have failed to examine that as an issue in their weaponization of the federal government subcommittee in the U.S. House. What an oversight. In a 3,500-word deep dive accompanied by a 2,600-word sidebar article over the weekend, the New York Times' Michael Schmidt delved into Trump's actions while serving as president in the White House and, yes, seeking to weaponize the government, including the Department of Justice, including the IRS, including the FBI, to go after his perceived political enemies. The article is headlined, "As President, Trump Demanded Investigations of Foes. He Often Got Them," with a subheadline warning, "He has threatened to target his perceived enemies if elected again. A look at his time in the White House shows how readily he could do so." begins this way. In an Oval Office meeting in the spring of 2018, Mr. Trump told startled aides that if Attorney General Jeff Sessions would not order the department to go after Hillary Clinton and James Comey, the former FBI director, Mr. Trump would prosecute them himself. Recognizing the extraordinary dangers of a president seeking not just to weaponize the criminal justice system for political ends, but trying as well to assume personal control over who should be investigated and charged, the then White House counsel, Don McGahn, sought to stall. Quote, "How about if I do this?" McGahn told Trump, according to an account verified by witnesses. "I'm going to write you a memo explaining to you what the law is and how it works, and I'll give that memo to you, and you can decide what you want to do." The episode, according to Schmidt at the Times, marked the start of a more aggressive effort by Trump to deploy his power against his perceived enemies, despite warnings not to do so by his top aides. And a look back at the cases of 10 individuals brings a pattern into clearer focus after Mr. Trump made repeated public or private demands for those people to be targeted by the government. Well, they ended up facing pressure, federal pressure of one kind or another. I'll link, I'll provide a free link to the New York Times for you to that full article and its sidebar when I post today's show at bradblog.com tonight. But just by way of reminder, since this sort of thing might be worth thinking about before casting your vote for president over the next now, what, fewer than 40 days before the November 5th election day. From Schmidt's sidebar summary of these 10 cases, rounding up just some of those people who were targeted while serving, while he was serving as president with a, yes, weaponized Department of Justice and FBI and IRS. Because though many of our listeners will likely remember many of these, a lot of our listeners may not, because apparently, many people in this nation have a really, really bad memory of what happened just a few short years ago, the last time this guy was allowed into the Oval Office. And it's kind of amazing to me how many people, you know, do buy into Donald Trump's, were you better off 4 years ago? When? 4 years ago? When you couldn't leave the house because there was a raging pandemic that you failed to deal with? When thousands of people were dying a day? When the stock market had gone over a cliff? When unemployment had gone sky high to levels not seen since the Great Depression? All of that stuff, do we remember that? Were we better off then than we are now? Apparently, people have trouble with their memories. Short-term memories. So maybe a reminder is needed here. As Schmidt writes, as president, Mr. Trump tried repeatedly to use the powers of the federal government to investigate or penalize those he considered foes. There was no legal basis for the investigation of many. None were ultimately put behind bars, but they had to fend off criminal investigations, civil suits brought by the Justice Department, and other forms of government pressure. Here are some more prominent examples from his time in office. James Comey, the former FBI director, he was subjected to a Justice Department investigation and a very unusual and detailed IRS audit. What did Comey do that Trump did not like? Well, he declined to recommend prosecution of Hillary Clinton. He opened an investigation into the Trump campaign's ties to Russia. He refused a loyalty pledge to Mr. Trump, and he bucked pressure to drop an investigation into Trump's national security advisor. Trump publicly called Mr. Comey a traitor and pressed for him to be investigated and prosecuted. Trump told his White House chief of staff that he wanted to, quote, get the IRS on Mr. Comey. That's unlawful. The IRS audit found that, in fact, James Comey had overpaid his taxes, which I did not know.
Andrew McCabe, the deputy FBI director. He was investigated by the Justice Department. He was fired. He was subjected also to an IRS audit. What did McCabe do that Trump didn't like? Well, after Trump fired Comey, McCabe opened a two-pronged investigation into whether Trump was a counterintelligence threat and was obstructing justice. Trump called McCabe a traitor, asked for him to be investigated and prosecuted for a range of matters. Trump said he wanted to, quote, get the IRS on McCabe and for him to be fired. The IRS conducted the same highly unusual and invasive audit on him that it did on James Comey. Prosecutors went to a grand jury to seek McCabe's indictment, but in a highly unusual move, the grand jury declined to charge him.
Wow.
Grand juries never decline. The old saying, you can get a grand jury to
indict
a ham
sandwich.
Yeah,
exactly.
But not here. Peter Strzok, the lead FBI agent on the Hillary Clinton and Russia investigations, he too was investigated by the Justice Department and fired. Why? What did he do that Trump didn't like? Well, while serving as the lead agent on the Clinton and Russia investigations, Strzok exchanged text messages with another FBI official that were critical of Donald Trump. Well, that sounds terrible. Working with McCabe, Strzok opened the two-pronged investigation into whether Trump was a counterintelligence threat and was obstructing justice. Trump called Strzok a traitor and said he should be criminally investigated for his handling of the Russia investigation. Trump pushed to have him fired, told top aides that he wanted the IRS to investigate him. Because of his ultimate dismissal, Strzok lost benefits and his pension. He racked up over $1 million in legal fees, and he has filed a lawsuit against the DOJ and the FBI seeking to have his job reinstated and to regain his full benefits and pension. John Kerry, Obama's Secretary of State, was investigated by the Justice Department, which I don't think that I knew. Kerry helped negotiate the nuclear deal with Iran while serving under President Barack Obama. After leaving office, he publicly criticized Trump for wanting to pull out of that deal. Trump told top aides and the Attorney General that Kerry must be prosecuted. The U.S. Attorney's Office in Manhattan looked into it, declined to prosecute Kerry, but the Trump Justice Department did not give up on trying to bring charges. Then Attorney General Bill Barr took the case to the U.S. Attorney's Office in Maryland, where the top prosecutor there came to the same conclusion as the prosecutors in New York, and they, too, declined to charge John Kerry. What about Hillary Clinton and her 2016 campaign? You may have heard about that. She, the former presidential candidate that had the temerity to run against Donald Trump. Well, she was investigated by the Justice Department. Clinton, what didn't Trump like about Clinton? Well, she ran against him in 2016. That was more than enough on its own. Trump publicly called for Clinton and her campaign to be criminally prosecuted on a whole range of issues. Privately, he pressured then-Attorney General Jeff Sessions to investigate and prosecute her and told the White House's top lawyer that if Sessions refused to prosecute, that he would do it himself. Prosecutors and a special counsel examined nearly all of the issues and conspiracy theories that Trump had raised about Clinton and her campaign and the Clinton Foundation, including the Clinton campaign's role in gathering information during the 2016 campaign about ties between Trump's associates and Russia and providing it to the FBI. A lawyer for the Clinton campaign was indicted on one single charge of making false statements to the FBI about Trump's ties to Russia. That lawyer was acquitted. Clinton sat for questioning with the special counsel, John Durham, answering a litany of questions about the issues and conspiracies that Trump had pushed about her, and yet she was never charged with anything. Michael Cohen, remember him? Trump's former lawyer and fixer? He pleaded guilty to federal charges in a hush money case involving the paying off hush money to the porn star Stormy Daniels on behalf of Donald Trump. He ended up serving a prison sentence for that. and he faced retaliatory efforts to stop him from publishing an anti-Trump book. Cohn had turned against Donald Trump in a federal investigation, admitting the president had directed him to make hush money payments to Stormy Daniels in the final days of the 2016 campaign so that Donald Trump could cheat to win that one. After Cohn pleaded guilty to federal charges connected to the hush money payments, Trump privately discussed with aides ways of trying to stop publication of a book that Michael Cohn was writing. Cohn was told by Bureau of Prison officials that in order to remain out of prison during the COVID pandemic, he had to sign an agreement saying he would not publish a book. Freedom of speech? Anyway, Cohn refused to sign that agreement, and so he was thrown back in prison by Donald Trump's goons. A federal judge later freed him. Trump also went after news organizations or had his Department of Justice weaponized to do so, including CNN, Washington Post, New York Times. Trump publicly called the media the enemy of the people. He repeatedly pushed aides to use the Justice Department to go after reporters who were writing stories that he didn't like, that he found embarrassing or damaging. You know, like all of these, the very definition of weaponization of the Justice Department to go after your political enemies, that Republicans are pretending somehow still that Joe Biden is doing against his enemies. Trump told the White House's top lawyer to tell the attorney general to, quote, arrest reporters, force them to serve time in jail, and then demand that they disclose their sources, according to a book written by John Bolton, who served as Trump's national security advisor. And then there was John Bolton, Trump's national security advisor, who subsequently faced criminal investigation and a civil suit by the DOJ seeking to block the publication of his book critical of Donald Trump. A career government official who reviewed that book for classified information accused White House lawyers of pressuring her to ensure that the contents of the book did not come out during Trump's first impeachment, and said that the lawyers retaliated against her when she refused. A federal judge refused ultimately to halt the publication of the book, and Bolton was never charged with mishandling classified information as they had tried to claim. But the matter cost Bolton and his publisher hundreds of thousands of dollars in legal fees. Two more here. Omarosa, remember her from The Apprentice? She became a White House aide for Donald Trump. She faced a civil suit by Trump's Justice Department that led to a $61,000 fine. She worked in the White House Communications Office in 2017. She wrote a negative tell-all memoir about Trump while he was president, and the president wanted to sue her for breaking what he considered a confidentiality agreement that she had signed. A day after her publisher announced the book, the White House asked the DOJ to open an investigation into a seemingly unrelated paperwork dispute involving her. And then finally, Stephanie Winston Wolkoff, a former advisor to Melania Trump, the First Lady. She faced a Justice Department lawsuit seeking to recoup her profits from a book critical of Trump and his wife. What she did that Trump didn't like? Well, Wolkoff published an embarrassing book about Trump and his wife during the 2020 election. That was more than enough. A month after she published that book, the Justice Department sued her, saying that she violated a non-disclosure agreement that she had signed with the government when she worked as a volunteer to help Mrs. Trump in the early months of the presidency. So those are just some of the cases. As Schmidt concludes, or I guess as he warns, quote, now, in the final weeks of the 2024 campaign, Mr. Trump is again openly threatening opponents, real and perceived, with investigation and prosecution should he be elected. referring to anyone he feels may cheat or has cheated in seeking to deny him a victory, he took to a social media platform this month to proclaim, quote, "When I win, those people that cheated will be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law, which will include long-term prison sentences so that this depravity of justice does not happen again. Please be aware," he wrote, "that this legal exposure extends to lawyers, political operatives, donors, illegal voters, and corrupt election officials. Those involved in unscrupulous behavior will be sought out, caught, and prosecuted at levels unfortunately never seen before in our country." Unscrupulous behavior according to who, Mr. Disgraced former president? Because the unscrupulous behavior you claimed about all of those 10 top officials that I just mentioned, that you weaponized your federal government to go after, to arrest them, to sue them, to investigate them, to audit them, none of those people ended up actually facing any real charges. They were just people you didn't like. So you're going to do that again when you get back in office? You bet you are. Especially now that your U.S. Supreme Court has said that anything a president does is, by definition, legal while in office. So given his record, I say we take Donald Trump at his word on all of this, if he wins. All right, but some of those who played along with his phony claims about a stolen election last time in 2020, well, some of those folks are paying a pretty stiff price today for those lies, as I will tell you about in two different breaking stories today. That's next on the broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman.
The Bradcast and the Green News Report are 100% independent, 100% listener-supported. But we can't do it alone. We need you. Please help us bring real facts to listeners at independent stations around the nation. Please drop by bradblog.com/donate. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
I guess he's not so untouchable after all, is he? Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Well, a federal corruption indictment was unsealed on Thursday for the current mayor of New York City, Eric Adams, a Democrat, a former Republican mayor of New York City, once hailed as America's mayor and already indicted in criminal cases. Has been found liable for hundreds of millions of dollars for defaming election workers in Georgia and still facing billion-dollar lawsuits from voting machine companies. Well, that guy, former New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani, has had his law license permanently revoked in the nation's capital as of Thursday. That following similar action by a New York court earlier this year over Giuliani's role in former President Donald Trump's attempt to undermine the results of the 2020 presidential election, as Politico reports it. In a one-page order on Thursday, the D.C. Court of Appeals did not directly address the D.C. Bar Committee's recommendation in May that Giuliani be disbarred for pressing a legal challenge to the election results in Pennsylvania without having any actual evidence to support his claims of fraud. That's not apparently why he was disbarred. Instead, a three-judge panel of the D.C. court found that Giuliani failed to even respond to an order requiring him to explain why he shouldn't face reciprocal disbarment after a New York appeals court decision to strip him of his law license in that state.
Wow, he didn't even respond?
Apparently not. The D.C. court had temporarily suspended Giuliani back in July of 2021 after being notified of a similar suspension in New York, and now it's permanent.
A panel of judges in New York on that case found a similar misconduct to the D.C. bar panel that had recommended he be disbarred in D.C. Earlier this year, back when they disbarred Giuliani in New York, where he had risen to fame as a federal prosecutor, a tough-on-crime Republican politician, before leading the city through the terrorist attacks on September 11, 2001.
Yeah, I mean, it is such a remarkable fall from grace.
They wrote in their decision, Giuliani, quote, repeatedly and intentionally made false statements, some of which were perjurious to the federal court, to state lawmakers, and to the public and this court concerning the 2020 presidential election, in which he baselessly attacked and undermined the integrity of this country's electoral process. That, according to the five-judge panel in New York, who disbarred Rudy Giuliani over the summer permanently in New York, and now the D.C. courts have done the same there. An incredible fall, indeed. But wait, there's still more accountability for Trump's election liars today.
Good.
Even as jury selection was underway in the long-awaited trial, as CNN reports late on Thursday, the pro-Trump cable channel known as Newsmax settled a major 2020 election defamation lawsuit with Smartmatic, the voting machine company, in a last-minute agreement to avoid a high-stakes trial that posed a significant risk to the small right-wing fake news outlet. CNN didn't call them fake news outlet. That was me. quote, Newsmax is pleased to announce it has resolved the litigation brought by Smartmatic through a confidential settlement. That, according to the network in a statement on Thursday, the terms of the settlement were not immediately known. The deal comes hours after jury selection had already gotten underway in the case in a Wilmington, Delaware courtroom ahead of opening statements that were scheduled for Monday of next week. A loss at trial could have put Newsmax on the hook to pay tens of millions of dollars to Smartmatic, putting the small cable channel backed by wealthy right-wing corporate interests into financial peril. And the settlement here, as CNN notes, is the latest in a string of 2020 election defamation cases to reach an out-of-court agreement just before trial. You'll recall, same thing happened when Fox News was up against it. They famously settled with Dominion Voting Systems last year for $787 million. $750 million for the lies that they helped Donald Trump and friends tell back in 2020 about the 2020 election. And the far-right channel known as One America News, they also settled with Smartmatic earlier this year. Both cases were also about the same 2020 election smears. The most amusing part about all of this, I think, at least about the suits filed by Smartmatic, is that Team Trump would often claim that both Smartmatic and Dominion, that they were either the same company or one of them owned the other one, or that they were somehow in cahoots with Trump attorney Sidney Powell, actually linking to my own stories, my own exclusive coverage at bradblog.com from 2008 to 2010. So these were really old stories, still accurate, but they applied to, you know, things that are different 15 years later. Concerning Smartmatic and Dominion, and she entirely misrepresented what I had reported for her own purposes in 2020 to help sort of drag Smartmatic into all of this, when the fact is Smartmatic only has voting systems in one county in the entire country, and that's here in LA County. And though it's the nation's most populous voting jurisdiction, I really don't think that even Donald Trump or Sidney Powell or Rudy Giuliani are claiming that voting machines here in L.A. County somehow helped Joe Biden to win in L.A. County in 2020.
Yeah. I mean, this was all the stuff about the dead Hugo Chavez
trying to.
Of that was based on your reporting.
Yes, it was.
And
you're
we
welcome.
Know that it is accurate because Smartmatic has never gone after you.
And by the way, you know, both Smartmatic and Dominion have gone after all of these outlets, and none of them have actually gone to trial because in every case, the so-called news outlet says, well, we better settle because we're going to get screwed in court on this.
They got caught dead to rights.
So Smartmatic was routinely conflated, you know, with these by these yutzes with Dominion, which does have a bunch of voting machine contracts all over the country, including the entire state of Georgia. And again, you'll note, as critical as I have been of Dominion's voting systems in Georgia, they have never sued me. Why? Because actually the stuff that I report has evidence to back it up, and they know it. And when we report on their vulnerabilities, there's evidence to back it up, and they know it. Not true, however, with the claims from Team Trump, all these evidence-free claims that both Dominion and Smartmatic somehow rigged their machines to steal the election from Donald Trump, to award it to Joe Biden, or something. And it's continuing to cost these right-wing so-called news outlets a lot of money to make these very well-evidenced charges against them about their fake news outlets to make all of that go away. So the chumps and dupes and suckers and patsies that watch those stations that actually think they are watching actual news instead of right-wing political propaganda, to make sure that those people don't know how they have been made into chumps and dupes and suckers and patsies by these right-wing news outlets. Newsmax still faces a separate defamation lawsuit over similar claims that were filed by Dominion. Newsmax still denies all of that wrongdoing in that case, but don't be surprised if they end up settling that one as well to make all of this go away rather than show up in court and prove their case and prove that they weren't lying to all their chumps and dupes and patsies and suckers. All right, take a quick break here. We've got some more breaking news on Helene. Even as I'm speaking to you here, we will get to that. And Desi Doyen's Green News Report. Right after this break, I'm Brad Friedman. Don't touch that dial. Hey, this is Brad. Please consider supporting whichever progressive media outlet is supporting you and the things that you care about. Most, just like us, do not receive corporate or political support. We all need your support to counter the powerful corporate media echo chamber. Right now, as much as ever, if you choose to support us, you can do it really easily, safely, and quickly via bradblog.com/donate. From Desi Doyen and myself, thank you. Well, yikes. Talk about rapid intensification. When we started this show today, the Hurricane Helene was a Category 3. It is now officially a Category 4 before it strikes Florida. That after this morning, it was 1.
Yes.
It's gone from a Category 1 to a Category 4 in less than 24 hours over that, record warm waters in the Gulf.
Exactly. That is the definition of rapid intensification, which now happens, I think, 3 to 4 times more often because of the record warm oceans caused by man-made climate change.
Now the winds are 130 miles per hour. And the New York Times reports that the storm is likely to make landfall as the strongest ever to strike Florida's Big Bend region. Usually these storms get weaker as they get closer to the shore.
That was then. This is now.
Yeah, that's the way it used to be. Now it seems to be working the other way.
Yes.
Holy cow. Be careful down there in Florida and beyond, as you mentioned earlier, in the southeast other states that are going to be facing major flooding over the next few days.
Yes.
As we discussed a little bit in a different world when we recorded this morning, when we recorded our latest Green News Report.
We don't want to go through this anymore, but we are going to have to.
Massive Hurricane Helene menaces Florida. Global warming doubled the odds of Central Europe's catastrophic flooding. Plus,
the choices we make today will determine our future for decades to come.
Biden promotes climate action at United Nations and Climate Week, but warns success is fragile.
All of those fragile successes and more straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Because you have energy on site in the country, we don't have any energy.
Oh, sure. You know why?
Sources.
Drill, baby, drill. Did you know that's our national anthem?
True. This is your Green News Report.
We sing it before every ball game.
Okay, Desi Doyen, I guess you're on storm watch again with not one, but two hurricanes that you got to deal with right now.
Yes, as we go to air, evacuations are underway in Florida in advance of Hurricane Helene rapidly intensifying in the record hot Gulf of Mexico. Projected landfall on Thursday night as a dangerous Category 4 with deadly storm surge potentially of 20 feet. Most deaths in hurricanes are caused by flooding. Helene is likely to be a significant multi-billion dollar disaster. It is a geographically large storm, and impacts will extend far inland into southeastern states. It's the sixth hurricane to hit Florida in just 3 years. Frequent hurricane hits have caused many insurers to flee the state, driving up prices for homeowners.
And it's the second hurricane to hit within just these past 2 months. The Helene, as I understand it, is gunning for the same place that Hurricane Debbie hit at the beginning of August.
Yes, and just a reminder, the right-wing Project 2025 calls for privatizing the National Weather Service, forcing Americans to pay for their free weather forecasts.
Yeah, we don't need that hurricane center. Let people pay for it.
Over in the also hot Pacific Ocean, Hurricane John, after making landfall on Monday as a Category 3 near Acapulco, has regenerated into a tropical storm off of Mexico's west coast.
Really?
And is forecast to make a second landfall.
Can that happen, that it actually spins up to a hurricane again?
Yes.
Oy.
In Central Europe, a new study by scientists at World Weather Attribution concludes that man-made climate change doubled the odds of the catastrophic rains and flooding that inundated the region 2 weeks ago. The 4 days of historic rainfall were the heaviest ever recorded in Central Europe, killing dozens and causing tens of billions of dollars in damage. The researchers said the floods are a stark glimpse of Europe's future. They warn that no country is prepared for the accelerating impacts of climate change. They urged policymakers to move faster to upgrade flood defenses and end fossil fuel use, warning, quote, until oil, gas, and coal are replaced with renewable energy, storms will unleash even heavier rainfall, driving economy-crippling floods. But OPEC is bullish that the world will remain addicted to oil. The oil cartel, in its annual forecast this week, projected that global oil demand will continue to grow through 2050, an outlier view that scientists say would lead to climate catastrophe.
Of course, but that's only because we're all idiots.
In New York City, during the annual Climate Week conference, police arrested more than 30 activists as they blocked the entrance to Citibank's headquarters in Manhattan, demanding that the bank stop funding fossil fuel projects. Also during Climate Week, President Biden drew a stark contrast between Democrats and Republicans on energy and climate after his final address to the UN General Assembly. Biden celebrated his administration's vast climate accomplishments, like new standards that have slashed air and water pollution from industry, vehicles, and power plants, and the Democrats' Inflation Reduction Act, the single largest investment in climate action in U.S. history that has created hundreds of thousands of clean energy jobs, revitalized U.S. manufacturing and domestic supply chains, modernized the electric grid, and invested in innovation, environmental justice, and more. All Republicans voted against it and vow to repeal it, even though the vast majority of funding so far is going to Republican congressional districts.
You're welcome.
Biden warned that all of that climate progress can be undone if Trump and Republicans regain power.
He says he repealed the Inflation Reduction Act. He let our factories shut down. He moved the world backwards. His denial of climate change condemns our future generations to a more dangerous world. And by the way, windmills do not cause cancer.
No, they don't. Thank you, Mr. President. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report. Choose wisely indeed. Man, what a day, huh?
Yeah, no kidding. This good luck to everybody in the path of Hurricane Helene. We wish you all the best. I hope it all turns out in the best possible way.
Is Mar-a-Lago in the path of Hurricane Helene?
It's not in the path, but it will get some of those impacts.
Well, thank God it is not in the path.
Well, I just want to note that FEMA,
yeah.
Federal Emergency Management Agency, is prepared for the multi-state impacts across Hurricane Helene. They've already moved resources into place in Florida, Georgia, North Carolina, and South Carolina, and they've got search and rescue teams ready to go and generators and people to help restore power.
Well, that's a shame.
And all of that.
Because Donald Trump wanted to get rid of FEMA, according to Project 2025. They want to disband FEMA, move it over to the Department of Interior, even though Donald Trump just days ago said he also wants to do away with the Department of Interior.
Right. So, you know, it really does matter who you vote for, especially when we are in the era of climate intensified extreme weather events that are accelerating. And, you know, as that study we reported earlier this week, these things are going to get worse.
Choose wisely, please. Thank you very much, Desi Doyen, our producer. Thanks to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's program, or you need to listen again or share it with friends, families, or enemies, you can do so via bradblog.com. Every show we've ever done for since the beginning of time is available there with no paywall, thanks to those of you kind enough to hit one of them donate buttons while you're there. $5, $10, $15, $100, $1,000. It is all welcome, whether it's a one-time donation or an automated monthly support. We greatly appreciate it. You are the only thing keeping us on your public airwaves. Drop me an email if you like. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. On the Facebooks, Mastodons, and sites still known as Twitter, you will find me at The Brad Blog. You will find Desi at Green News Report. She'll probably be tweeting out the storms over the next few days. So we will see you there at all of the above. Until we see you here next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.